Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion of politics as if the people mattered. I'm David Swanson. We all favor peace. Many of us even oppose war. Some of us oppose the preparation for war. But most of us pay for war and war preparation with our taxes. Some people refuse.
Each time tax time rolls around and I have an amount due, I have looked at that number because I do fill out my form and just felt that I couldn't pay. Sometimes early years I was below taxable income, and other times when I have a taxable income, I've generally refused 100%.
There are, in fact, many options for refusing to pay war taxes.
We have the whole range in our network of people who live below the taxable income or off the grid so that none of their money is going to go to military and war. People who refused a very small amount, a symbolic amount, $10, $1, $100, something that they feel they could handle if the IRS comes to collect. And then people do go by the War Resisters League pie chart or other charts that show, you know, a particular percentage that's going to the military. So I think this year the War Resisters League was 47 or 8% of all of your income taxes that go to war. So people will look at that number and choose to resist that percentage.
I am thrilled to welcome to Talk Nation Radio Ruth Benn, who is the coordinator of the National War Tax Resistance Coordinating Committee, a position she has held since 2003. She co-edited with Ed Hedeman the fourth and fifth editions of the book War Tax Resistance, A Guide to Withholding Your Support from the Military, published by the War Resisters League. Ruth Benn has been doing this work since the early 1980s. She has a master's in education with a concentration in peace studies from the University of Massachusetts Amherst, and is now the coordinator of the National War Tax Resistance Coordinating Committee. The acronym is NWTRCC, and that's the website, nwtrcc.org. Ruth Benn, thanks for being on Talk Nation Radio.
Well, thanks for having me.
So, for those who are not initiated, why would you not want to pay your taxes?
Well, you know, for a number of years I did, and then I got active in the peace movement. And for me, it was actually at a time, it was the end of the 70s when I first learned about war tax resistance, but I got involved with outreach to particularly young men about registration for the draft, because Carter was bringing back draft registration at that time. And as I was beyond any possibility of being drafted or having to register myself, but I felt this connection to where my money was going, and that became my way to resist, I guess, to refuse the military, since I wasn't going to have to be drafted. And of course, there are so many other issues over the years, nuclear weapons and the many wars that the U.S. has been involved in. And each time tax time rolls around and I have an amount due, I have looked at that number because I do fill out my form and just felt that I couldn't pay. Sometimes early years I was below taxable income, and other times when I have a taxable income, I've generally refused 100%. But I think for most people in war tax resistance, and I think it's certainly something that ever since there have been wars and taxes, there have been people who have refused. Certainly for the Quakers, it was one of the early points of problems with the government, particularly in England. But, you know, for years and years, the Quakers have been kind of a front religion on this problem of taxes and war. So I think a lot of us who've gotten active in peace issues just face that regularly and say, oh, you know, here I am out in the street protesting, but where's my money going?
I think most people, Ruth, are unaware that over half of federal discretionary spending goes to war and war preparation. I think a lot of people imagine that it's a little sliver of the budget, and they hear that you're refusing to pay all of your taxes, including for things you might support, in order to avoid paying that little part. But even understanding that it's actually 57% or so that goes to war and war preparation, why not withhold that portion and pay the rest of your taxes?
Oh, for myself, there have been times when I've refused less than 100%, but over the years, it tended to come back around to whatever I paid. Some of it was going to the military. If the government had added a war tax very specifically, we would have seen huge resistance to that. I think, thousands of people would have said, okay, I'm not going to pay for that war. I just don't believe in it. But because the government at some point figured out that it was a good idea to throw everything into the same pot, it has made it more difficult for a lot of people to feel like they could resist. We have the whole range in our network of people who live below the taxable income or off the grid, so that none of their money is going to go to military and war. People who refuse a very small amount, a symbolic amount, $10, $1, $100, something that they feel they could handle if the IRS comes to collect. And then people do go by the War Resisters League pie chart or other charts that show, a particular percentage that's going to the military. So I think this year the War Resisters League was 47 or 8% of all of your income taxes that go to war. So people will look at that number and choose to resist that percentage. For myself, when I do 100%, I also do give all that money away. So I usually owe maybe $1,200 or somewhere around there. And I give that money to groups that are helping people or helping victims of war. So I feel that that's my way of contributing my money without giving it to the IRS and the federal government.
There's a long history. I mean, we go back to the war on Mexico and Henry David Thoreau refusing to pay his taxes to support that, but then someone else paying them for him, whether it was Emerson or someone. And it's not a brand new idea. Has it ebbed and flowed?
Well, certainly, I think with every war where there's a tax, there's been somebody who's resisting. We have a quote from the play Lysistrata about the women sitting in front of where the money is held to stop the men from getting it to pay for their war. War tax resistance certainly ebbs and flows with the peace movement and the anti-war movement in any war and how strong it is. We call this time that we're in the modern war tax resistance movement, which we start with World War II and have had many people active in our network who started refusing at that time against World War II. So with each war, there are more resistors, and then at the end of the war, it might drop off again. The Vietnam era was probably the largest period for war tax resistance, and also the most visible of the consequence that most people are afraid of, where the IRS comes to collect. So even at that time, the government had raised the tax on long-distance telephone calls to 10%, which was very specifically to help pay for the Vietnam War. So people who were refusing that tax may be owed, $7 in this federal excise tax. And the IRS actually came to collect bicycles and cars and houses based on this small amount that was due. So they became very visible because of that kind of collection effort by the government. So the stronger we are, the bigger the reaction is from the government. But, of course, that's what a lot of us are looking for is, as we resist and refuse to pay, we are trying to get attention to this issue. So although I'm always afraid of the IRS, I think everybody is, I still feel it's more important for me to try to resist than to worry about what they can do. I mean, they're not going to drop a bomb on me, which is, of course, what our tax dollars are doing in other places.
It's striking to me when I look back at the history of taxes in this country to realize that they've primarily been created and expanded to pay for wars, that the
right.
that the income tax came out of the Civil War, where both the North and the South finally created an income tax, and that through most of the major wars, taxes have been expanded and enlarged dramatically and then scaled back partially at the end of that war, and most partially post-World War II, as we've continued with this permanent military state. Is part of your effort to educate the public about the connection between wars and taxes? I mean, we seem to have a lot of people who love wars but hate taxes and don't really associate the two.
This is true, or unfortunately a lot of people who love wars think that that's the only thing that our tax dollars should be doing, is funding the Pentagon and forget everybody else and all those social programs. Certainly the connection with taxes and wars is real. Particularly, I think it was with World War II when they started withholding, which really brought taxes into even more people's lives because the money was taken out of the paychecks as we have today. And that really expanded taxes to every working person pretty much. Even if you get some back at the end of the year, I mean, because of the economy, a lot of people are not owing income taxes. So there's a bit of a change there. Although if you have withholding, you're giving the government this free loan. If you're getting a refund at the end of the year and you want to try to adjust your allowances to at least bring that into balance so that you're not having a lot of your money loaned anyway, a lot of extra money loaned to the federal government.
Well, I think that's useful advice, actually, regardless of whether you oppose war spending. But how does the war tax resistance movement relate to groups and individuals on the left and the right in this country? Because it seems like liberals, by and large, believe that taxing and spending is good, with sort of these blinders to where a majority of the spending is going. And there are more libertarian individuals and ideologies that believe taxing and spending are bad, and in some cases, including on the military. But how do you find yourselves relating to liberals and to libertarians?
Well, in terms of sort of liberal, left, progressives, I think most of us who come to war tax resistance are active on a lot of the issues that people in progressive movements are active on. It's part of what gets us to this point is, being concerned about people and how they're being cared for and what's happening to the earth and all these issues that connect us. And then for many of us, seeing the military as being the biggest problem. People in our network, for a lot of people, war tax resistance is kind of the personal thing they do, and their activism is with all kinds of different organizations. And also, when you resist and then decide to give the money away, you can use your money for lots of the things that you believe in. With the sort of right or libertarian people, it varies. It's very tricky. Somebody like Ron Paul, who is very anti-war, against the wars, perhaps for different reasons than some of us. And also, a lot of them want to dismantle the IRS. So that would be an advantage for some of us who are in this resistance point, but it's not my number one issue. So we kind of cross paths here and there, but don't subscribe necessarily to each other's beliefs, bottom line. I think with libertarians, there are certain things about the way the power that the IRS has where a lot of people end up calling our office because they've refused to pay for some completely other reason than being against war, but they've run into the same issue with the IRS that a lot of us have. So I have a lot of conversations with people who don't want to pay taxes for all kinds of reasons just because of the collection issues that come about. So, and people in our network, there is a range. There's certainly libertarians in our network who are anti-war, libertarian, maybe a little more pacifist side of that, and a lot of anarchists who probably don't, bottom line, believe in taxes. I tend to have myself coming from more a perspective of trying to figure out how we can share the money but not wanting my, you know, how we can share our wealth among more people and help the world, but not wanting that money to go to war. So I'm not so much against taxes, although I'd say it, you know, it is the whole range within our network.
We are speaking with Ruth Benn, the coordinator of the National War Tax Resistance Coordinating Committee, NWTRCC.org. Ruth, what about someone like myself who tries to be a peace activist, who tries to be an activist and an author and a radio host for peace and justice, but who has been paying his taxes? Am I a hypocrite, or do I need to consider the risks, and what are those risks to someone who has a wife and child to support, believes he's doing something useful for the movement out of jail? What, if any, risks are involved? Should I stop paying all or 50% of my taxes?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, you know, it certainly is a personal decision, and people have to figure out, I guess, how, you know, how it works for them in terms of their conscience and the work they're doing with the tax issue. I think a lot of us say, you know, I'd rather have a million people refusing a dollar than 100 of us refusing $1,000 each or something, because the government really doesn't like this protest at all. And the thought that people would really begin to make that connection with their money, and you know, the huge budget of the Pentagon and the militarization of this country, certainly the government doesn't like that. So I do encourage even a small level of protest. The one thing that's most unlikely with war tax resistance is jail, and many people think, you know, I meet a lot of people who, when they find out I've been refusing to pay my taxes, they say, why aren't you in jail? But the government mostly wants the money. You know, that's the IRS's job, is to collect the money. It's much more complicated for them to throw people in jail. They do. You know, so maybe 30 people in our movement since World War II who've actually gone to jail. It's usually not for paying taxes specifically, it's usually for refusing to give information to the government. So that whole process is more than they really want to deal with. But the IRS has been given more and more power to collect. So it's fairly easy for them to levy a salary, to garnish a salary. A lot of people know about that, or to take money from a bank account. So I think people do need to think about, you know, their economic situation and what they feel that they can do in relation to this. We do find more and more people these days who are trying to live below the taxable income or outside, you know, outside of the system, off the grid. I think we see that with Occupy. Lots of people who are trying to figure out how to start a different kind of economic system, maybe more local, more regional, something that pulls us away from this big mess in Washington. This huge bureaucracy, which certainly the Pentagon is one of the biggest ones. So anyway, I go back to saying, if you file and you usually owe at the end of the year, to think about even $10, something that will show a protest.
So it's a withhold $10 and include a statement explaining why, and that will have an impact.
Yes, I believe it will, or, you know, send your statement to as a letter to the editor or to Congress people and let them know. You know, I think it adds power to your anger about what's happening with our money.
And were I to withhold much more than that, or all of my taxes, it sounds like there's a reasonable possibility that the IRS would simply force its way into my bank account and take the money anyway.
They certainly can do that. You know, I think those of us who've been resisting over time, you tend to keep much less in the bank and live more on cash and figure out how to do that. If your life is pretty much on the grid and, you know, you have income that's declared, especially if you're salaried, if you're self-employed, it's a little bit easier. We have a network of counselors around the country, and also our office and our 800 number, which is 800-269-7464, that people can get in touch with to talk more, hopefully personally, if there's somebody in your area, about your situation and what might work best for you.
Say the number one more time.
It's 800-269-7464.
And how many people would you say are currently resisting taxes in to any degree?
It's really, really hard to say. I know we've often said 8,000 to 10,000, but so many people do maybe, you know, live outside the system a bit that they don't necessarily want to be in touch with us and be open about it, or, you know, have the IRS know. I encourage people to be public about what they're doing and why, because that's how we strengthen our movement. But I also understand the situation some people are in. So it is hard to tell, and people who are living below the taxable income, the IRS, you know, doesn't sort of track that. So there's less information about that.
The military budget has of course, more or less doubled in the past decade. To what extent is war tax resistance also resistance to war preparation spending, which is, of course, much bigger spending than the individual wars? And to what extent has the movement been growing in proportion to the level of military spending?
Well, I think the movement, like the peace movement in general, I mean, we kind of rise and fall with the peace movement, I'd say. And unfortunately, despite the last decade, we really haven't seen a huge increase in the peace movement. Certainly 2003 with the invasion of Iraq was very discouraging for a lot of people. But I think those of us who stick with it, especially over decades, do focus a great deal on that Pentagon spending and the increase in the budget. And, you know, my thought is always, how are we going to prevent the next war? Well, somehow we have to cut off the money. And that, you know, this even small step is one way to look at that. So I think we find a lot of people who, before, actually right around the invasion of Iraq, there were a lot of new people coming into war tax resistance, and then it dropped off some as time has gone on. So I'm not sure what we're going to do to build this whole anti-war network up again more strongly, but we'd certainly like to see it.
Are there legislative proposals other than reducing military and war spending or eliminating them? It does seem like even if our income tax forms just identified the portion of the income tax that was for military spending and the portion that was for other spending, it would have an incredible impact on public awareness. Are there steps like that for which your movement advocates?
Well, the main legislative campaign, which has also been going on since the 70s, I think, is the National Campaign for a Peace Tax Fund, and they have an office in Washington, D.C., and that legislation is asking for a conscientious objector status for taxpayers so that those who chose could pay into other portions of the budget that don't include violence, that don't pay for violence. So that kind of thing, seeing that on a tax form where you could make that choice, would be great. I don't know that the government is thinking about making it that easy, but it certainly would be something that would give people thought, but it's not getting very far in Congress despite all these years. But the office is still active in D.C. and does lobbying about that legislation. Otherwise, when the IRS government used to send out their 1040 booklet, it always included the government's version of the pie of where the money's going. But we tend to separate out Social Security and the Medicare, the other things that are raised separately. So we're just looking at the income tax portion of the budget, which shows the higher military spending, and the government doesn't tend to do that. So people have seen a smaller slice of the pie that's going to the military.
Oh, yes. And the government separates out military spending in departments other than so-called defense, and lumps all the debt as non-military debt and so forth. So the pie is incredibly distorted. The proposal to allow conscientious objection to a portion of your tax payments, sometimes I've seen that proposal requiring religious reasons. Is that included in what you're advocating for?
It actually is called the Religious Peace Tax Fund Bill at this point, and for many of us who aren't religious, that's a bit of a problem, but it still it would be a step on the way. And like conscientious objector status, they have broadened that to some extent to include people with philosophical reasons. But there's so many things about the details of legislation that change over time that I would certainly like to see a bill that's more stronger than that. But there's some bills in Europe, actually. We are part of an international network of war tax resisters and peace tax campaigns, and in some of the other countries, the bills are very specifically to allow conscientious objectors to war taxes to pay into a fund that creates an alternative defense system, like a nonviolent defense system. That I'd like to see, something that says to people we can defend ourselves without buying these hideous weapons. So that's kind of an interesting way to look at the bills. England has a bill like that, and I think Germany, maybe some of the Scandinavian countries.
Well, my plan has always been to establish a new religion, a religion against mass murder, and I wonder if you would consider a nomination as a minister in that religion, should it become necessary.
I don't know if I'm much of a preacher, but I
Oh.
could get some tips from Reverend Billy, maybe. I don't know.
Yes, I think you could do it. There are we have just a minute left. There are so-called cuts, that is, cuts to future dream budgets, cuts made to sound 10 times as big by spreading them over 10 years and so forth, but some sort of minimal cuts now legislated to the military budget, which of course both parties are working hard to undo by January. Do you get involved in lobbying and pressuring the government around such questions?
I myself don't do a lot of it, although we do have connections with a lot of the groups that work on cutting military spending issues. We certainly get a lot of information from National Priorities Project, and a lot of people in our network are much more active in some of those groups than I am. But I'm always watching it. It's One does get rather cynical because you feel after a while the only so-called cuts we really get to the military budget are the ones that are the cuts from their projections, right? They project, let's spend $900 billion, and in then they reduce that by a couple billion and say, see, we cut the military budget. So it's a very frustrating area to be working in.
Well, it is indeed. But for people who want to be better informed about that question and about how you can avoid contributing your share to what amounts to needless and senseless and horrific mass murder around the world, you should contact Ruth Benn at the National War Tax Resistance Coordinating Committee, NWTRCC.org. Ruth, thanks for being on Talk Nation Radio.
Thank you, David, and thanks for all you do.
This is Talk Nation Radio. I'm David Swanson. Talk Nation Radio is produced in Charlottesville, Virginia, engineered by Christiane Brown in Reno, Nevada, and syndicated by Pacifica Network. Until next time.